people who love them.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to another episode of The Thing About Cars. It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta, Georgia. Recording in Strongbox West, as always. Around the table today, we have
Ben,
Becca,
Kathy,
and our new friend
Paul.
Paul, we are having trouble with that mic. Is it turned on?
Just get close to it.
Yeah.
Hello.
I know what the problem is. Try that again.
Paul.
There we go.
That's beautiful.
Sometimes known as the Mazda Man.
The Mazda Man.
Oh,
so,
and you know what? I'm just realizing you have an awesome radio voice.
Why, thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
How did you get into the Mazda business, Paul?
Wow. I believe in childhood, at the age of 10, my father switched from Volkswagens to a Mazda RX-2. It was year 1978, which in fact would mean I was 8 when he purchased it. And by about 10 years old, I thought to myself, this is neat. There's something different going on
here. Yeah. Did the RX-2 have the rotary engine?
Indeed. The Wankel rotary engine.
Oh, you didn't want to say Wankel, did you? I had threatened to do interesting things with the word Wankel.
So, again, going from the age of 10, looking at an RX-2 to today, have you always been a Mazda fan?
All the way through. I presently own a Mazda, and I've owned nothing but Mazdas the whole way through.
Wow.
No kidding.
That's nice. Impressive.
I had no idea.
Yes, sir.
And now you're currently, what is your job title over at Mazmart?
I am the general manager since the year 2006.
Okay.
Wow. Nice.
Okay, cool. I do have some sad Mazda news.
Uh-oh.
My 2005 Mazda 6 with the 3-liter engine in it is, I think, on its way out.
No.
Yeah. It's very sad.
A moment of silence.
Even though it's a Ford drivetrain in that thing.
Yeah, you had scared me by saying it was gone. It's not, in fact, gone.
No, it's still in my garage.
It's not dead. So why do you think it's on its way out?
Well, my sister gave me her Honda Accord, her 2005 Honda Accord for really, really cheap. So I've been driving that. It's only got like 200,000 miles on it, whereas my Mazda has 330,000 miles on it.
Wow. Okay.
And so the Mazda has a few customizations. It's got aftermarket radio system in it so that I could do hands-free. It's got aftermarket rims. The headlights are upgraded. There are a couple other tweaks on the inside that I've done. But I'm just sitting there waiting, like, do I part it out? Do I just scrap it? What do I do? I'm not sure. And if I can squeeze a year's worth of time out of my sister's Honda, which I could probably get more than a year out of it, I'm sure, then I can turn around and fall in love with another Mazda, because that Mazda 6 has been fun to drive. I drive the Honda now and it's reliable and it's nice, but it's just not the same.
So what would you say is the main difference with how they drive?
The Mazda has a lot more get up and go.
Oh, okay.
And it handles, I think, in a superior fashion to the Accord. The Accord is the everyman, everyday car. It's strictly built for reliability. There's some styling to it, but it's meant to be normal.
An appliance.
Yeah.
Whereas the Mazda, I think especially around the 2005, when I think this is generation one of the Mazda 6, it's really fun to drive. I was kind of surprised. I got in it and I'm like, wow, this car is vastly different. So I kind of want to get another one, but, one, I can't afford it. And two, my sister gave me a deal I could not refuse on her Accord.
But the Mazda hasn't gotten any worse, is what you're saying. Because you're talking about the modifications and things, but you haven't said why it's on its last leg. So it's still where it was.
It's
you're just driving something else.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. It's the idea that it's been in 3 accidents, none of which were my fault.
Mm-hmm. And an accident takes its toll regardless.
Regardless, right. And my wife is now saying, Mickey, you should just put a kick me sign in the back window.
What?
By the way, I'm sorry about last week and rear-ending you.
Everybody might want to let Kathy get a head start on the driving.
I'm a bad driver.
I refuse to believe it, Kathy. I can't believe it's that bad.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. To put it this way, I have almost T-boned my boss's Jeep. I've almost T-boned my boss's Jeep twice in our parking lot. And I always tell him, don't think about the 2 times I've almost T-boned you. Think about all the times I wanted to and showed restraint.
So here's the laundry list. Here's the real laundry list with the Mazda. The Mazda has, I T-boned somebody because it was their fault. They pulled out in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Someone rear-ended me because they weren't paying attention at a stoplight. And
I already apologized for that.
and the third thing is actually about a month ago, someone sideswiped me on the interstate.
Oh my God.
To avoid being killed by a semi. And I'm lucky that person did not get killed. And my car is only cosmetically hurt by these things, but it just adds up, right? And
yeah.
So combined with that, two drivetrain issues. One is that this engine is notorious for leaky valve covers, and I think the main seal on it is leaking. So every time I drive it and then park it, I'm smelling oil the entire time.
Ooh.
And the transmission, even though we replaced it at about 200,000 miles, every time it shifts into fourth under power, it shudders the entire car. Bam! It's like a collision in the engine. Mm-hmm. And I can't figure out how to stop that. I think they maybe that new quote unquote new transmission just sat still for too long and something must have happened. But that's one of the things. So it's like all the laundry list of annoying problems with the car just keeps getting longer and longer. And, you know, I could sink some serious money into fixing it, but I'd much rather just get another Mazda 6 with the 6-cylinder engine in it of the same era and play with it. Because it remains a fun car. So
just get an engine from the new era and put it in what you got. I know how I am.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Exactly. Everything is fixable.
Well, I'm weighing the cost of a new engine versus just buying a whole new car with a new engine in it and something like that.
Yeah, because, you know, Max and I have had a detailed enough conversation that he has given me ideas and things and confirms that, yes, I could actually fit the Mustang 281 into the Jeep Liberty.
Nice.
And keep it a 4x4.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Right now the Jeep is my daily driver.
Right.
So I'm all over that.
Well, yeah. Enough about the Mazda. The Honda has been, you know, all things considered, even though it's an appliance, I do notice that sometimes when I'm revving it, it shifts gears. It upshifts, but it feels like it's underpowered. So like the engine will go when I'm going from second to third, third to fourth.
Honda.
Yeah, that's pretty common with Hondas.
Yes.
I've driven three Hondas and I have experienced what you're talking
about.
Sounds
familiar.
Like if I were driving a stick, I would say to that person, or I would say to myself, look, I'm shifting too early.
Right.
Right. And so that's what feels like is happening in this 2005 Accord. Otherwise, it's in solid state. My sister has taken pretty good care of it.
What the hell happened with Honda that they're making appliances now? Because back in the late 1980s, I bought a used Accord. It was an 83 Accord, 5-speed hatchback.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, what a nice little car that was. I still miss it. It was fun to drive. It felt good. It felt right. Everything about it just seemed so good. And now?
I think
appliances.
Yeah. What do you think, Paul?
I'm not sure when the changes came, but Honda definitely for the last probably two decades have made appliances. They are still a company that's pretty good at in the engineering department, but that is probably the key difference between Mazda and Honda. Mazdas are all about the smiles,
yeah,
all about personality and you connecting with your car for the bang for the buck in terms of your enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the folks who are putting it together are very interested in that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
got your zoom over here.
Yeah. I just think that there are like a lot of people like me who, well, aside from being a bad driver, I don't know a lot about cars. So, which is funny that I'm here. But, you know, that just want something reliable and, you know, don't know the difference. So if they don't know the difference, why put all of that effort into it?
But it's so funny that so many people want a reliable car, but don't want to do things like change the oil.
Well, that's the thing.
That hits home.
It's a culture of convenience, right? People just don't want to have to think about that sort of thing.
There's Jiffy Lubes everywhere if you don't know how to do it yourself.
But, you know, we're talking about the Honda thing, and it makes me wonder if like Honda used to have a real racing soul, right? Seeing Honda on an open wheel car was something that we all expected. And now I just don't expect that anymore.
Well, so, their production cars, I think they've just lost their spirit.
Yeah.
I never expected that.
Yeah. This segment was brought to you by Jiffy Lube.
Well, let's take a quick moment to change gears a little bit and do our moment of Grand Trivia Auto. We neglected to do that last time, so let's pull the Grand Trivia Auto out of the shop, put it back on the road again. And you guys ready?
Sorry.
This is our moment. So I'll ask the question. We can debate on the answers, and then at the end of the episode, we'll give the answer. The question for today is, and please tell me if I've done this one before, the term cabriolet attached to a model name would indicate that blank. Okay. The term cabriolet attached to a model name would indicate that blank. A, the car is a convertible having a folding roof. B, the car is a sport-oriented performance variant. C, the car has only two doors. Or D, the car is an upscale luxury variant. So hold on to that and think about it, and we can debate it later with the end of the show. So we haven't done that one before, have we?
No.
No.
Okay. Next item, now that we've talked about Mazdas and Hondas and whatever I should want to be driving.
Like, oh my.
Yeah, right. My goal, like I said, is to hold on to the Honda for maybe a year. And hopefully by that time, I know where my life is going and I can buy a real set of wheels. And
if you buy a Mustang, you can go really fast.
You know, yeah. I'm not opposed to it. I've seen some Mustangs that are making me.
No, I can tell you what Mustangs are making me.
That one I had in Colorado a few weeks ago. Oh yeah.
Yeah, Ben. If you missed Ben's write up, Ben did a, what did you call it? What was the blog post?
Mountain by Mustang.
Mountain by Mustang. It was a really, really cool review. Really good write up. So
thank you.
Shall we do a listener question?
Sure.
And then I want to get back to the topic of Mazda since we have Paul here. One of our listeners, Donovan C. Donovan C. says, and I think we should all know the answer to this question, but we're going to get Kathy's answer first.
I was about to say, you know, what's this we you're talking about? Me of we is not sure.
Donovan asks, what makes some engines non-interfering engines compared to the ones that are interfering engines?
Nice.
Yeah.
If one is your mother?
I would like to say that the non-interfering engines are just classy. They're just, they have manners.
Yes.
And they're just like, or they just don't care. They're just like, hey, you do you.
Snobbish.
Which is not the same thing as a non-confrontational engine.
Yes. Well, I prefer a passive-aggressive engine. It's like, yeah, fine, if you want to go that way, that's fine.
That would make my G8's engine just a bitchy engine.
Bitchy engine. Uh-huh.
I have a passive-aggressive
So what's an openly,
GPS. Oh. It's like, well, fine, don't go the way I told you to. Rerouting.
Whatever. So what's an openly hostile engine do?
That's your car. Shifts really hard.
Shifts really hard. Steals your wallet and calls you bad names.
Right. So to finish Donovan's question, he says, basically what I'm asking is he's been told if timing belts slip on a non-interfering engine, the engine is then bad and can't be fixed. But one that allows for interference.
It's the other way around.
It's the other way around, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, let's answer the question for real now.
Well, what it has to do with is the cylinder head design. Basically, you know, every car made today has overhead valves. They come down, you know, into the combustion chamber as opposed to the old flatheads that came up. So if the valves are coming down and the piston is coming up, this is where the interference part comes in. On what's known as an interference engine, if the valve train gets out of time, the piston can collide with the valves.
Right.
And on a non-interference engine, just the design is different. There's enough space or there's recesses in the piston crown or whatever that no collisions will occur.
Right. And just to make the thing a little more obvious, what happens in timing is the piston comes up. No, the piston goes down. Fuel is squirted into the engine and ignited.
Yeah. Well,
no, wait.
Squirts in, the piston comes back up, then you have ignition.
Then you have ignition.
Suck, squeeze, bang, blow.
Exactly. So in
I played that game in college once.
That's right.
That's actually one of my favorite things. It's called Petrosexual, and underneath it, it says suck, squeeze, bang, blow.
Nice.
Can put that on my resume.
There you go.
Yeah. So, In any case, yeah, it's the space required between the end of the open right. valve and the piston head that qualifies it as interfering or non-interfering.
Yeah, pretty yeah. much. And so on the interference engine, if you lose the timing, if your belt or in some cases chain breaks,
yep.
and this is exactly what happened with my VW GTI some years ago.
So
it makes me, I don't know, really nervous for a car like that, though. I mean, obviously, you don't want to do any kind of modification that would change the timing either, which used to be a basic thing you did. You went out, advanced yeah. your timing.
Right. Well, with Hondas, this is why Hondas were adamant that you change your timing belt every 60,000 miles
oh, yes.
without mm-hmm. fail.
Well, and even a cam timing modification, if it's enough to produce a performance difference, it's probably not that much that it's going to be enough degrees off to right. really affect this.
Well, how about we just make yeah. sure the engine design from factory doesn't screw up that bad? I mean, that's a pretty massive mistake.
Seems like basic for me.
I want to hear what Paul has to say about this, because yeah. Mazda doesn't do it the same way the rest of the world does.
Well, the rotary engines don't have any valves.
Right.
Now, that being said, the question comes, why are there interference engines versus non-interference engines? And I think there's no way to produce as much power with the non-interference as you can with the interference motors, ultimately. With all the advanced valve timing mechanisms that we have nowadays, Honda's VTEC and iVTEC and so on, it's hard to not kind of design in interference if you want to get the most efficiency and power.
Yeah. Is that because it all relates to compression, right? It's because that piston is coming into that space to make compression right. that makes mm-hmm. power.
Yeah. Right. Interesting. So it's the smaller space which makes higher compression possible.
Yeah.
All right. So I hope that answers John's question, John. If that didn't, please get back to us. I'm sorry, Donovan. Donovan, if that doesn't answer your question,
Donovan,
please
come back. Donovan.
And to bring it back to Mazda, you yeah. know, one of the things I like about mine, I've got a 2000, what year is it? It's a 2013 3. And it's got a chain driven cam.
Yeah, mine's chain driven.
So
as well.
I don't have to worry about that belt for, you know, at least 400,000 miles or so.
Yeah. Well, that's what the Honda manual says about my Accord now. It says yeah. you have a chain, don't worry about it. That's basically what the manual says.
Mm. Good on them, yeah.
Yeah.
So I just have a question, and this may take us off on a tangent, but being that I'm with people who know cars, where would you start if you're someone like me that doesn't know a lot about cars? Where would you start to gain that knowledge?
And we've had that question a few times, and there are many, many sources. I still kind of like How Stuff Works, though.
Ah.
HowStuffWorks.com, just because it can give you basic principles behind systems as opposed to specific cars. Plus, it has moving diagrams that can
oh, yeah.
illustrate for you, like the piston cycle, the suck, squish, bang, blow, the four cycle. It will animate it for you so you can see exactly why that's what it is.
That's really cool.
And I'll tell you how it works. Yeah, it's a great
I was going to say YouTube University, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
have to have a lot of, you know, self-discipline with yeah. that method. And there's so much, you know, chaff among the wheat on YouTube.
Sure.
But there are some channels like Engineering Explained or, you know, even some of the old, like, GM training films from the 30s that you can find on YouTube are really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I was just about to mention Engineering Explained.
Yeah.
So two mentions of that organization. That gentleman who runs that, I think he may have gone to Georgia Tech at some point.
Probably.
Very bright. Mm-hmm. Very bright.
Yeah.
Covers a lot of ground.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
Kathy, I know you're going to have to leave us soon, so I wanted to cover one quick thing before we wrap the episode. Is you had thrown up on the board a 14-year-old solved their mother's Jeep's blind spot. What's that all about?
Well, so the mother had this Jeep, and it apparently had this horrible blind spot, and using cameras and projectors, the 14-year-old was able to basically project onto the blind spot, like the pole in the way or whatever was in the way, what was on the other side.
No way. Nice.
Yeah. And so I was like, that's really cool.
Huh. Projectors.
Yeah.
I thought maybe they just stuck extra cameras out the back and had screens up on the
Well, doors. I liked Becca's answer to that problem.
The girl taught her mom how to turn her head.
Yeah.
I mean, lifelong driver of Mustangs. If anybody's ever driven one, especially Fox chassis, SN95, that era, massive blind spot. I lost a 72 Nova back there one time. I mean, it's, you just have to learn how to look enough to find what's over there. But I'm assuming maybe it was a, like a Wrangler soft top that had extra big.
I'm a big fan of convex mirrors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they one.
And cranking them out where you can actually see things.
Exactly.
Yes. Moving your mirrors is very helpful. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
My first Lotus had such horrible ones. This was a 86 Esprit. And, you know, like if I really cranked my head around, I could see to the left. But for the, if I was changing lanes to the right, the basic principle was, you know,
Jesus, take the wheel.
Allow three beats of the turn signal and then pray.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm seriously considering putting a periscope on one of my cars because, you know, you just sit in that traffic and you don't know what's going on and you can't see over everybody. So I'm seriously considering just sending up a periscope. Mm-hmm. What's going on down there?
Well, that's all we have time for today. Well, Paul got a hand up. Yeah.
I wanted to say that 14-year-old is going places.
Yeah.
Yes.
Keep your eyes open for that 14-year-old.
Definitely. But two things before you can end.
Yes.
One, Paul, I really want to hear you say Bugatti.
Bugatti.
Oh, baby.
Excuse me while I melt.
That laugh, too. It's a thing that I have. I love the word Bugatti. But also, you haven't answered or let us answer the trivia question.
That was on my list. I'm looking right at it, actually. So,
say Bugatti again.
The question here is, again, the term Cabriolet. Bugatti. If you attach the term Cabriolet to a car model name, does Cabriolet indicate that the car is an upscale luxury variant? The car has only two doors. The car is a sport-oriented performance variant. Or the car is a convertible having specifically a folding roof.
I would say it's secret option E, Cabriolet. It's a bullfighter.
It's a bullfighter. And I was going to say maybe because I'm Southern, but we always pronounced it Cabriolet. You've got this, I don't know, more formal Cabriolet.
Cabriolet? That's the only way I know how to
cabriolet.
Say it.
It comes with milk. Cabriolet.
Come to you from the same people that say Ponce de Leon and, and Fayette.
I thought it was Cabriolet.
You're so funny.
No.
If you know the correct spelling, please, or the correct pronunciation, please tell us what it is. Cabriolet is the way I've always heard it. Ponce de Leon Avenue is the way I've always heard it.
Oh, yeah.
Atlanta sometimes only has one syllable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, anyway.
Anyways.
So, any guesses, Ben?
Yeah, it's a convertible.
It's a convertible?
Absolutely.
She said bullfighter. It's a bullfighter.
And I was also going for convertible.
It's true. It said that while the term cabriolet formerly referred to a two-wheeled carriage pulled by a single horse, in the automotive context, it describes a model with a folding roof. So, nice. Thank you for listening. As always, this has been The Thing About Cars, recording in Strongbox West Atlanta. We will catch you again in about a week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.